Okay, and away we go. We're going to cancel everybody today, folks. Welcome to another Tuesday afternoon on Shake and Wake Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cancel the Cabal. I'm going to cancel everyone. That's the plan, anyways. 2 hours of book reading today. Sexual Sabotage. One mad scientist unleashed a plague of corruption and contagion on America by Dr. Judith Reisman. And the third hour, and I have the Poopmeister on again today. I guess I'll talk to him before, well, after the show. I don't know if I want to do 3 hours every single week, but maybe twice a month. I don't know. I have to talk to Andy about it too. I think it was chapter 7. Yes, chapter 7. Pandering, promiscuity, and pornography. A little subsection is called Just a Piece of Paper. Most of the pre-Kinsey generation found transcendence and sexual security through the church and synagogue taught beliefs of chastity, love, marriage, and fidelity, and bearing and raising children. These values were transformed then into hard work, self-governance, and service to God and country. But Kinsey sacrificed those values on the altar of his pagan dogma that a civilized society can healthfully separate sex from love, commitment, respect, and procreation. Yes, I will, Annie. Repeated often enough, Kinsey's spurious data on fornication created widespread distrust, not just between husbands and wives, but also between unmarried men, women and men. A marriage license would soon be poo-pooed as that mere piece of paper. Love, not marriage, would be the reason for having intercourse, and inevitably physical lust was adequate qualification for a role in the hay. A witnessed marriage contract publicly assured women of a reliable life partner. Did it. Or does it, I should say. Safety from venereal disease, rape, and myriad other catastrophes. Well, I guess she is talking about the 40s and 50s. While marriage gave men great power over their wives, it also provided a sense of duty beyond the self-care and protection for their children. The couple would strike a bargain based on the assumption of a gentlemanly, even loving husband who would not abuse his. Economic and physical advantages. Once women lost their most powerful bargaining chip for marriage, their virginity, they had to resort to a backup bargaining tool, sexual availability and agreeability. However, marital sex was commonly a joyful pleasure for both. Assuming the couple had continued to honor one another, but contractual monogamous marital commitment has been the foundation of civil society, and backup plan wasn't likely to lead to lifelong stability for women. Based on the common law, America's legal system did not reject Kinsey's bogus findings that justified early sex with as many partners of as many ages, sexes, and even species as possible. Most Americans also rejected it at first. Soon, however, more and more people yielded to the relentless mantra of supposedly harmless and healthy free love, acceptance of Kinsey's dogma, percolated downward from university professors until it became the new sex science religion. Kinsey's fake data would slowly normalize sexual anarchy. Embraced and repeated by the intellectual elite, Kinsey's black propaganda inevitably spilled over into all forms of education and entertainment, where it took on a life and false truth of its own. By 1964, a Time cover story marveled that sexuality and open nudity became prevalent on the avant-garde stage. The rebels of the 60s are adrift in a sea of permissiveness. Now, I take a little, it's a misrepresentation, the way she uses black propaganda. It's just supposed to be black, it's just supposed to be propaganda. She doesn't need to insert the word black in there, as if there's anything such called a white propaganda, because there isn't. Propaganda is propaganda. There is no good propaganda at all. It's all bad. Wish I could have read this before and talked to her and told her about it. I'm sure she got told, though. Bitch, cow, and female goat. This ought to be interesting. In unprecedented numbers, children went off to college, where their professors taught them that their parents' love was a cover for envy and fear, and their virginity and sexual fidelity were abnormal, even deviant. Children of the baby boom slowly began rejecting everything their parents had fought to preserve in World War II. President of Barnard College at Columbia University in 1948, Millicent C. McIntosh, Ph.D., warned that Kinsey lined up statistics which seemed to show that women is not really different from a bitch or a cow or a female goat. In 1953, said McIntosh, college girls felt trapped by Kinsey's statistics and wondered whether they were normal if they were not having relations. At the same time, many college boys felt that they were not actually virile if they could not keep up with the statistics Dr. Kinsey presents. But McIntosh observed that if they heard Kinsey's big lie often enough, people begin to believe it, no matter how much they may realize in their more lucid moments that they should not swallow it whole. Yeah, Mom, I don't know. I think just the word, the two words, black propaganda, give it a little bit of a racial tone there, in my opinion, anyways. It just needs to be propaganda all throughout the entire book. She's used it like a dozen times now or more. The word black just doesn't need to be in there, in my opinion. Even fornication-friendly Margaret Mead, Ph.D., warned that Kinsey, who referred to reproductive sex as outlet, was training the public to confuse sex with excretion, excremental rather than sacramental. Mead agreed that Kinsey suggests no way of choosing between a woman and a sheep. Kinsey's black propaganda worked. Americans believed scientists and put their stock in the declarations of the experts. How bitter, how desperate children must have been, thinking that their parents and therefore their own lives were a sham and a farce. how delusionary and depressing for young, hopeful, idealistic boys and girls. So it was that once they accepted Kinsey's deviant data as true, the children of our greatest generation shifted their moral sanctions. Ever since December 1953, Playboy magazine has touted the sexual revolution, and especially Kinsey, that also regularly promoted illicit sex and drugs, the vulnerable feeling of betrayal had become a quivering state of rage by the 1960s. The horrors of Vietnam further fueled the depression and despair of many young Americans, such that radical students rioted, started fires, screamed obscenities, hurled rocks at police, and set up bombs. Some waved the banners of the communist enemy and chanted, "Ho, ho, ho, Chi Minh." Many staged violent, drunken, drugged sit-ins. They raged at stunned, cowardly, foolish, and clueless university administrators and radical teachers who, at heart and even publicly, often both led and encouraged with the youthful revolutionary leftists. In 1955, the ALI MPC quoted Kinsey, claiming premarital intercourse is also very common and widely tolerated, so that prosecution for this offense is rare. In fact, we have shown premarital intercourse was hardly common or widespread. Regarding Kinsey's data on working class males, the pre-Kinsey national hard data statistics on venereal disease, illegitimacy, and abortion fully disproves the claims that ours was a nation of promiscuous women and men. But despite solid evidence to the contrary, the ALI MPC swallowed and regurgitated Kinsey's absurd statement with no attempt to validate. His research. Despite Kinsey's claim, no reliable data suggests sexual ethics were less conservative in the working class communities. The hard data on illegitimacy and venereal disease confirms the facts. Promiscuity was known to be a dead end for women. Few men and significantly fewer women of any class were promiscuous, yet the ALI MPC cited Kinsey's snide ridicule of America's moral creed. In a heterogeneous community such as ours, different individuals and groups were widely divergent views of the seriousness of various moral derelictions. The immorality of extramarital fondle or kiss may have to receive legislative concern once we embark on the task of enforcing morals. That was from the ALI MPC. This loosening on moral imperatives, moral absolutes, is certainly causing many such subtle changes in the human landscape. Over the years, American moral laws had grown to protect women from what our hard-nosed Judeo-Christian patriarchy recognized as a predatory streak in their fellow man. However, if most women and men were fornicating with no bad public health consequences, these carefully designed special privileges for women would have to go. So in 1955, Kinsey's sex frauds were carved into the American Law Institute's Model Penal Code. Sex science would now participate fully in the protection of the predators to the injury of their victims. Kinsey's sabotage of the Greatest Generation had profound fallout in the law with regard to protections of unmarried women. Protections for unmarried women. The American Law Institute Model Penal Code, the ALIMPC, was enacted all or in part by every state legislature, weakening or eliminating laws that, while restrictive, turned out to have protected the interests of women and children. Fornication, cohabitation, seduction, breach of promise, prostitution, and yes, even laws restricting public access to contraception outside of marriage. In promoting premarital and extramarital sex, Kinsey's reports had wide-reaching effects on sexual relationships outside of marriage, as rampant promiscuity led to increases in venereal diseases, illegitimacy, and yes, prostitution. Contraception was broadly legalized in 1965. With widespread reliance on contraceptions instead of abstinence, promiscuity multiplied exponentially, as did illegitimacy. Following legal access to abortion, genital herpes, and AIDS had devastated our country and many parts of the world. What's more, we associate various debilitating and fetal illnesses with many forms of contraception, even the pill, which for 40 years experts instead was completely harmless and even beneficial to health, far from it. Before Kinsey, prostitution was illegal. Since Kinsey, it became viewed as such a victimless crime that sex therapy, surrogates, prostitutes can practice in some states to treat impotence. Acceptance of prostitution and sex for profit further legitimized pornography, spawning increases in sexual abuse, incest, and domestic and international human sex trafficking. 1960, Joe and Jane College are virgins. By the early 1960s, Phyllis and Eberhard Kronhausen, PhDs, Scandinavian free sex radicals, advocated pornography for all. The Kronhausens later built an erotic museum in Sweden where liberated parents might often bring the little kiddies. In 1960, even the Kronhausens grudgingly lamented that our college youths are still the antithesis of Kinsey's aberrant population. Despite the agendas of such sexual elitists, American colleges had no co-ed dorms in 1960. Just as we called men in the service our boys, we offered additional protection to college students by giving them a grace period in which to mature. They were still girls and boys. Many colleges could expel these girls and boys if they were not in their dorms before the doors closed at midnight. Further, sleeping got around a girl. Further sleeping around got a girl a very bad reputation, and it was similarly bad for the boy to brag about such conquests. The Washington Post recently noted that during the sexual revolution, it was collegiate etiquette to hang a tie or a sock from a doorknob, signifying privacy required. Now, TERFs might be the first college in the nation to make an explicit what other schools have only hinted at. It is not cool to have sex in front of your roommate. Certainly before Kinsey, the patriarchy believes females could easily be seduced into a sexual behavior contrary to their own interests and that a society such that of society, such men viewed females as the weaker sex and as a higher moral and empathetic sex, deserving their protection from exploitative, wily, physically stronger men on the prowl. But they couldn't have foreseen the college hookup culture. For hard data from early in the last century confirms pre-Kinsey male chastity as well. Heeding the claims that the spread of gonorrhea and syphilis, New York City mandated premarital VD testing in 1935. According to these records, the positive rate for syphilis during the first year of compulsory testing was only 1.34%. Even liberated men had to admit that it's possible the prevalence of the disease was exaggerated, and that the respectable types who got married licenses were at low risk for a sexually transmitted disease. And to their dismay, the Kronhausens described the sex lives of 200 male college students in the early 1960s, concluded in a huff that even in 1960, Joe College was still a virgin. Those suave Kronhausens were offended. They chose to hide the percentages, stating only, "No sex without love." Many of the students were as blushingly romantic about sex morals as any girl of their age would be. To these young men, sex without love seemed utterly unethical. Some of them did not even think it right to kiss a girl unless they were in love. Premarital intercourse in the college group of the whole one still finds considerable resistance towards premarital intercourse. What has changed in terms of sex mores between the attitudes of the older generation has been, as Kinsey puts it, the radicalizations which serve to justify the resistance against premarital intercourse. Shame, good gracious, but thanks to such bona fide sexologists, see how advanced and liberated we are now. In 1960, the two researchers groaned to think that many college men found premarital intercourse unacceptable due to morals and religious tenets. Even more depressing to the sexperts was the fact that most college men objected to premarital sex for emotional and ethical reasons. Even more depressing to the sexperts was the fact that most college men objected to premarital sex for, I guess I just read that. Our free love advocates fretted that Joe College found intercourse too precious to share with anyone but his fiancée or even his wife. The Kronhausens were shocked, aghast, and selfishly determined to help Kinsey rid the nation of such obvious sexual self-discipline. Everyone likes children. Reluctantly, contemporously, and even scornfully, the Kronhausens admitted that Joe College did disdain, because he and lower educational groups overvalued virginity in themselves, but especially in women. Of course, the truth was that, and is, that appropriately valuing virginity in women and in men had no fatal downsides versus enormous personal, societal, and educational benefits. But of course, the Kronhausens were not interested in such practicalities. Nor was Hugh Hefner. With his pushing and prodding, the drug culture in the 1960s and 70s exploded as pushers found new young buyers who sought to numb their pain pharmaceutically. Too well do I remember such a tragedy. My neighbors, Joe and Catherine Riley, fictitious names to protect their privacy, were long-suffering Stoics from the greatest generation. Their daughter, Cindy, and her husband would lie around stoned while their small daughter roamed, half-dressed, through the neighborhood. "Aren't you worried she'll get hurt or molested?" I asked. No, laughed the modernized, beguiled parents. "Everyone likes her, like thousands of other children." Their sweet little girl was freakishly exposed and was indeed harmed. Okay, find my pen here and mark my spot for the first break, I think. So, let me see here. I guess I will take about 6 minute, 12 second song. Be back in just a few minutes, everyone.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Amash program.
Well, that didn't work too well. Let me see. I guess I'll try this one. I don't know where that file came from. Let's try this one.
Here's a song that they sang with the Statesman Quartet back in 1950, and it's still great. You do the Big Chief's part, and you do Jake's part, and I'll just sit over here and wish I was in the group, okay?
Up above my head, there's a music in the air. Up above my head, there's a music in the air. Up above my head, there's a music in the air. And I really do believe,
and I really do believe,
there's a heaven somewhere. World go round, that's the way to be happy, that much I found. Sing a song and be happy and free, so turn around, children, and follow me.
Well, I have a soul that's weary and worn, but I've heard the music since the day I was born. And I remember what the good Lord said. Now I hear his music and it's up above my head. Music and it's up above my head.
that's the way to be happy, that's much I found. Sing a song and you'll be happy and free, so turn around, children, and follow me.
Well, I have a soul that's weary and worn, but I've heard the music since the day I was born, and I remember what the good Lord said. Now my ear is music and it's
up above my head.
Okay, sorry there, I lost track of my mouse again. Had to find it. Oh, I did forget in the beginning to say that all the stations are listener supported, so please help them out if you're able to. At the first opportunity, millions of baby boomers fled their parents' comfortable homes to defy their falsely labeled hypocritical mom and dad by joining hippie free love communes. The free love movement of the 1960s advocated unattached, uncommitted sex. With the arrival of the contraceptive birth control pill early in the decade and some states legalizing of aborting babies, women increasingly offered their sexual favors, Kinsey style. Shotgun weddings became outmoded. Instead, men increasingly abandoned women of all ages, races, and religions to single mother poverty. Women were commonly injured by sex without love or commitment. The devastation of such fornication as well as no-fault adultery was enormous, not to mention the unparalleled impact on children. By the mid-1960s, women who survived the toll of multiple partners, venereal disease, and traumatic abortions were often left permanently scarred, physically and emotionally barren. Just gotten something to drink and getting all choked up again already. Neither the bloody three-year Korean War that began. Neither the bloody three-year Korean War that began in 1950, nor the civil rights struggle that began in the mid-50s, nor the horror of the Vietnam War that began silently in the early 60s, nor the assassinations of Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, in 1968, explained the sexual self-destructiveness of so many American young people. The quote, "Make love, not war," was the spirit of the 1960s. However, Joseph Heller saw the late 1950s and early 60s as disasters when drugs destroyed so many of his old Coney Island friends. Sex was often fused with drug use, and many claimed to enjoy their sexual experiences more when high on marijuana mescaline, or LSD. Group sex and orgies became commonplace in some circles. By the end of the 1960s, typical Americans could no longer avoid the media's expert focus on the joys of free sex without love or marriage. By 1972, Nina and George O'Neill's best-selling book, Open Marriage, popularized swinging and wife-swapping, selling Americans on adultery as a restyled and updated type of monogamy. Attempting to get men to pop the question, educated attractive young single women took to engaging in sexual antics that were once even too degrading for most prostitutes, telling themselves that they were indifferent to wedding bells, highly educated, financially secure, and sexually free academic or business women, breathlessly awaited a man's marital proposal. Of course, it was unlikely to come. Such women commonly were devastated by sex without love or commitment. The booty call on his cell phone speed dial. Partially correct, sexology-trained professional Ian Kerner wanted to legitimize homosexuality, sodomy, and much of the Kinsey model. But even this so-called sex doctor to Generation X and Y began to wonder. In the very first episode of the television show, Sex in the City, Carrie Bradshaw posed a question. In an age where a woman has access to the same money and opportunity as a man, can she also have sex like a man? Can women pursue sex for the sole sake of pleasure without any emotional or deeper sense of attachment? Can she hook up casually without feeling post-orgasmic regret? Kerner said post-orgasmic regret was often accompanied by sadness or anger. The female orgasm releases a burst of oxytocin, also known as cuddle hormone, that causes a connection, often even to the one-night fellow. Contrary to establishment propaganda, this quizzical therapist found that women's orgasm without love could be more depressing than masturbation. Like most sexologists of the Kinsey cult, Kerner doubtless never really read Kinsey's so-called scientific research. He, like the others, just accepted all the Kinsey's claims, thinking they were science. After Kerner saw the Fox film Kinsey, he had other misgivings. I never did see it either. Kinsey was more interested in sex as a pure psychological act than an emotional expression of love. Watching the film, I was struck by the scene in which Kinsey's assistant and protege, distraught at the toll that casual sex has taken on his life and the subsequent indifference of his mentor, shouts at him, "You think sex is effing is just something. But you're wrong. It's the whole thing. And if you don't watch out, it will cut you wide open." For Kerner, the cinematic scene in Kinsey was like a lightning bolt. He noticed that millions of women seek love in their age of their booty call, that sex matters, even if you pretend it doesn't. So enlightened was Kerner that he seemed to think he had discovered the wheel. Even though our grandparents and the Bible and our heritage had preached the same thing all along. Kerner noticed that sex could be magical, but it also was the potential to debase and destroy. Still, even as a pornographically modified sexologist, He wondered why so many women he counseled were being destroyed by sex. The answer is clear to those who consider the question carefully. Those who value history and literature, or those who still have common sense, sex without marital commitment retards love. True is to his sexual indoctrination, Kerner values erotic liberation. Yet he is troubled. What do women get today instead of love, marriage, children, and grandchildren? Kerner's answer is that women get orgasms that represent some guy's ability to add your phone number to his cell phone's speed dial. The cost of sexual sabotage to society is high. Kinsey saw sex as separate from our mind, body, heart, soul, separate from love and commitment. Allegedly, what do we do with our body has no lamentable physical or emotional effects. Really? Question mark. Sex without soul. For 60 years, Kinsey's own baleful vision has separated sex and body from brain and love. He succeeded in this because scientists bowed to his delusions. Naturally, the working public always pays economically, emotionally, physically, and civilly for the errors of elitist, magical, psychotic visionaries. Predictably, devaluing virginity and chastity came at a great price, along with skyrocketing rates of illegitimacy and abortion. Countless college students and other baby boomers fell victim to the growing infestation of sexually transmitted diseases. Genital herpes, human papillomavirus, chlamydia, and other venereal epidemics, not to mention depression, heartbreak, alcohol, drug, and sex addictions. Topping off the list in 1981, the era ushered in the deadly AIDS virus. The statistics on all of these post-Kinsey diseases are sobering. Reclaiming America noted this venereal disease fallout in The Truth About Alfred Kinsey. America's sexual revolution predicated on Kinsey and his scientific research has had a profound and devastating impact on our children and our society. The current claim that pre-Kinsey Americans were as promiscuous and as subsequent claim that pre-Kinsey Americans were as promiscuous. Something I just read again. I got to start over. The current claim that pre-Kinsey Americans were as promiscuous as subsequent generations is either based on illiteracy or premeditated lies. In fact, birth to unmarried teens, age 15 and 19 years, jumped 254% from 1950 to 1992. After 1973, with contraception and abortion available, we can conservatively estimate a tripled increase in teen sexual intercourse to at least 600% since Planned Parenthood, not parents, manage the sexual lives of American youth. The Medical Encyclopedia identifies almost 12 million new cases of VD each year, almost 65% under the age of 25, and one-fourth are teenagers. In 1994 alone, total known cast for VD in the United States was more than $16 billion, the known cost. U.S. carriers of AIDS in 2006 are estimated at 36,828 and deaths at 14,016, largely unchanged since 2002, despite massive educational efforts to stem the epidemic. The epidemic of venereal diseases follows almost 5 decades of classroom sex sabotage by Planned Parenthood. Hang on a second here. Said one of my screens go dark for some reason. SIECUS et al. SICUS. I don't know what that is. I guess I'm going to find out here in a few seconds anyways. Maybe not. Further, Reclaiming America reported that Planned Parenthood ended the lives of 244,628 unborn American babies in 2003. This group received $350 million in federal taxpayer money in 2008 and is supposed to increase their grants in 2010, roughly $1 million a day, to encourage promiscuity and kill the results. Pediatrician Meg Meeker, MD, writes the In Epidemic, How Teen Sex is Killing Our Kids, that sexually transmitted diseases are crippling and killing children. Meeker reports that nearly 50% of children have had sex by grade 12, and about 25% of those are infected with STD. Chlamydia and other genital herpes have skyrocketed 500%. Among white teenagers in the last 20 years, resulting in infertility, divorce, depression, suicidal attempts, and on, according to the government-funded National Longitudinal Survey of Adolescent Health and Heritage Foundation report in 2005. This year, nearly 3 million teens will be infected. Overall, roughly one quarter of the nation's sexually active teens have been affected by STDs. No moral or immoral right or wrong. The American taxpayer has been forced to finance a substantial portion of this group's grotesque agenda, despite its ongoing record of sabotage, injuring minors, Planned Parenthood annually dips into the federal fork barrel for millions of dollars in government grants and contracts. Whose special interest do their elected officials serve by funding their wealthy and influential sex organizations? Society must weigh other consequences of the growth in our society's tolerance for and acceptance of even extremely overt sexual deviance. Kinsey's explicit goal, wrote liberal author Scott Stossel, was to strip sex from religion and morality and give sex over to a new sex science. That goal is now fully achieved, Stossel quotes Kinsey. However, the moral interpretation, there is no scientific reason for considering particular types of sexual activity as intrinsically in their biological origins, normal or abnormal. Present-day legal determination of sexual acts, which are acceptable or natural, and those which are contrary to nature, are not based on data obtained from biologists nor from nature herself. Whatever the surveys found was natural, and whatever was natural was normal, and whatever was normal was morally okay, Stossel wrote. In other words, Kinsey sought to demolish normal as a meaningful category of sexual behavior. He concluded that under cover of pseudoscience, Kinsey successfully divorced sex from questions of moral value and social custom. Do we know why? Question mark. Clearly, Kinsey sought to use his work to legitimize and normalize his own deviancy. Indeed, the notorious sex guru may have been the father of sexual perversion, including bestiality, and most Americans regard as revolting and unthinkable, with good reason. But Kinsey championed these bizarre and barbaric particulars, and even blamed the Old Testament and the Talmud for the ban on what he called martings between individuals of different species. Blasphemously, Kinsey likened laws against sex with animals to biblical taboos, which made certain foods clean and other foods unclean. The student of human folkways is inclined to see considerable body of superstition in the origins of all such taboos, for human contacts with animal or other species have been known since the dawn of history. Yeah, in ancient Rome and Sodom and Gomorrah days, maybe. Kinsey's interspecific bestiality contacts. Of course, rape, torture, murder, and cannibalism have also been known since the dawn of history. That they have. But they are still barbaric deeds that Judeo-Christianity and any civilized culture considers more than taboo, but criminal. Such judgments protect the civil society. Paul Robinson, a Kinsey friend, wrote that Kinsey evaluated every form of sexual activity in terms of its role in the sexual lives of the lower species. Wonder what the lower species is. As natural because they conform to basic mammalian patterns. He added that Kinsey naturalism received its most forcible expression of those chapters of the reports treating sexual contacts between human beings and animals of other species, or interspecific contacts, as he preferred to call them. Kinsey said that sex with animals offers a psychological intensity comparable to that in exclusively human sexual relations. We might wonder how Kinsey would know such a thing. But Kinsey provided other clues, claiming that human enjoyment of bestiality required satisfying an animal with an orgasm. Kinsey also dubbed most animal sex as homosexual. Why? Because, said Kinsey, female animals show no erotic arousal and fail to reach orgasm. Finally, Kinsey felt losing an affectional relation with the particular animal could traumatize the human lover. Taken together, it is rational to consider Kinsey's descriptions of bestiality as autobiographical. As Robinson suspected, in fact, Kinsey felt erotic responses to humans and to animals are the same. And interestingly, Robinson points out that in Kinsey's writings, only when the zoologist described bestiality did he mention love. Robinson wrote, thus he found it entirely credible that a man might fall passionately in love with his dog, and that affection could be returned in kind. The elements that are involved in sexual contacts between human and animals of other species are at no point basically different from those that are involved in erotic responses to human situations. In effect, Kinsey confused the Kinsey refused to grant the human realm as a unique place in larger order of things. Indeed, it was precisely the pretension to such specialness, he believed, that accounted for most of our sexual miseries. That's a good place for a break. Good place for a break. Let me see here. I'm going to play about a 4-minute song that I like. I haven't played in a long time, so hope everybody enjoys it. Yes, welcome back. I like the song too, Andy. It's I like all the music that was in the Lord of the Rings movies. I should download more. And once again, everybody, if all the stations are listener-supported, so please help Andy out if you're able to. Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM. Today, bestiality, zoophile websites abound. Indeed, the American Psychiatric Association, APA's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Disorders, DSM, no longer classifies sex with animals as a pathology unless accompanied by distress or interference with normal functioning. Though these erudite psychiatrists might at least be concerned about disease transmission or even animals' distress, the DSM committee increasingly concerns itself solely with achieving orgasms, any and all orgasms. Having relied on Kenzie's data as the science that normalized even the most barbaric and humane and inhumane behaviors. How could the APA normalize and destigmatize such extreme pathological sexual perversions as bestiality? Only zoophile writes this way about sex with animals, murmured a renowned psychiatrist when I presented Kinsey's statements. Kinsey sees no difference between Romeo and Juliet and Romeo and Rover. But when I said, "Don't give me name." In the beginning, Kinsey libeled the Judeo-Christian Greatest Generation. In the end, nearly 60 years after the Kinsey reports, his cultic lobby has resurrected the ancient theology. Baal, Peor, P-O-E-R, Peor, Priapus worship wrapped in scientific robes. Kinsey's cult sabotaged the reality of morality by claiming to prove scientifically that there is no right or wrong, no good or bad, no moral or immoral, and no normalcy or deviance. In Kinsey's world, we can do no wrong except perhaps to uphold our traditional Judeo-Christian values. In Kinsey's world, the only perverts are virgins, virgin men and women who marry, stay faithful, bear children, and raise them in a wholesome, intact home. Chapter 8. Big Pornography as Sexual Sabotage. Kinsey opened a floodgate of the AIDS epidemic, rampant abortion, pornography, increased divorce, and sexual anarchy America faces today. Michael Savage, 2005. Hepburn as witness, off the pedestal and into pornography. The famous actress Kate Hepburn is certainly another liberal witness to Kinsey's sexual sabotage, warning that women have gone from the pedestal into pornography. Now merely sex objects, decades before the violence and degradation known as gonzo porn. I hope she explains what gonzo porn means. With regard to pornography, the world has indeed changed in the years since Kinsey published his black propaganda. Hefner's launch of Playboy in December 1953 genuflected to Kinsey, saying his was the most important book of the year. I did a research paper comparing the statistics in the Kinsey Report and U.S. laws. Thus, one man's vision changes another man's life, and then the world, as Hugh Hefner and his magazine Playboy did eventually conquer the world. We gave our own flag and a bunny army. Hefner exalted in 1970. Hefner recognized Kinsey as the incontrovertible word of the new God. Indeed, Hefner saw himself as Kinsey's publicist. Hugh Hefner launched Playboy in December 53, 8 years after the war's end, and a scant 5 years after the publication of Sexual Behavior in the Human Male. The magazine was Hefner's Kinseyan outreach to college males. He declared that Playboy would be Kinsey's mouthpiece, and Hefner would be Kinsey's pamphleteer, branding the college population with Kinsey's black propaganda. Hefner openly parodied Kinsey, falsely describing the hypocrisy, the gap between what we said and what we actually did. Of course, Hefner was actually the poster boy for male virginity. It would bring more bad news for women, children, and our civility. As Kinsey moved sex from the marital embrace to this standalone recreational industry with millions of sexual disease and impotence victims, ultimately filling the coffers of the elated pharmaceutical companies. From conventional wisdom argues that porn simply increases libido. We are giving pornography a bum rap when we hold it accountable for disease, impotence, and abuse. After all, what's wrong with porn? Is it really such a bad thing? Yes, pornography is a very bad thing. Hefner trains college Joe how to seduce a virgin. Until the Kinsey and Hefner media frenzy claimed to prove widespread female sexual promiscuity, it was a crime to seduce a female in 36 out of 48 states, plus Washington, D.C. Seduction was defined as intercourse with a girl of previous chaste character by means of various deceptions, artifices, or promises. Brian Donovan, a sexology professor at the University of Kansas, noted that women in the Progressive Era, 1900 to 1920, brought felony charges against men who reneged on their promises of marriage. New York's seduction law not only criminalized betrayal, but it also functioned as a tool in the prosecution of sexual assault. Such a view of women's rights came under attack by Playboy's first issue, with Marilyn Monroe on the cover, told its naive customers to renounce marriage, arguing that women are all just Miss Gold Digger after men's money. With the inaugural issue, Hefner editorialized about his hedonist Playboy philosophy. He would hire no married men, quoted his guru, Alfred Kinsey. Hefner sought to eliminate the togetherness marital ideal that had characterized our nation. If you are a man between 18 and 80, Playboy is for you. If you're someone's sister, wife, or mother-in-law and picked us up by mistake, please pass it along to the man in your life and get back to your lady's home companion. Ooh. We believe we are fulfilling a publishing need only slightly less important than the one just taken care of by the Kinsey Report. Based on Kinsey's phony statistics, Hefner launched this effort to resist marriage, defend adultery, and call for changes in U.S. laws, namely to end alimony for jettisoned wives. Much of Hefner's ongoing Playboy campaign for no-fault divorce translated into legal change. As the Rockefeller-funded Kinsey Playboy cabal emerged, touting machinistic sex for our brave new world. First, seduction became legalized as state legislators believed the ALI MPC calling for modernizing our restrictive sex laws, thus promising marriage and tricking girls into sex, lost its unambiguous moral and criminal stain. Soon, uneasy seducers could be cool and follow Playboy's lead without fearing a jail sentence. 9 months after Hefner's first Playboy issue, he published his Joe College Seduction Manual, Ex Virginity, an important treatise on a very important subject. Here, Playboy urged bachelors to seduce virgins by dangling love, marriage, and family before their eyes. In fact, although in some states, seduction would still have been criminal offenses, Hefner's September 54 issue declared open season on virgins. You must now face up to the problem of virginity in your own female friends and acquaintances. You will, of course, meet a certain amount of intellectual resistance from young ladies who have been previously misguided by narrow-minded mothers, teachers, maiden aunts, etc. The purpose of this article is to show you how much resistance to learning, a form of social lag, can be most easily overcome. Clearly, in Hefner's view, most co-eds were virgins. Spreading the good news is what the article is about, claimed Playboy. After achieving success in deflowering, the common term at the time for a girl's first sex experience, a reticent co-ed go on to others. Though the funding patriarchs sought to protect female vulnerability by controlling male predation, Hefner made it clear those days were gone. Playboy advises its naive reader to give her just enough alcohol to release her inhibitions. Promise her anything, certainly marriage. If need be, emphasis the intellectual rather than physical. In this regard, the Playboy author says Freud and Kinsey have done more for sex than any other men who ever lived. Playboy advises selecting a suitable subject, and these days that can sometimes be more of a problem than you might assume. But the magazine provides several strategies: the alcoholic approach, the intellectual approach, the Freudian approach, the atomic age approach, the snob approach, the persistent approach, and of course, the Kinsey approach. You will meet, too, from time to time, the girl who wants to conform, to do whatever everyone else is doing for Miss Common Denominator. We suggest Kinsey's last volume, Sexual Behavior of a Human Female. You can prove almost anything with this book, like 81% of all American women pet, 60% of premarital intercourse. 60% have premarital intercourse. 75% of the women who experience sex have no regrets afterward and make better adjustments after marriage. The idea is to bowl her over with the sheer mass of your statistics. all proving that simply everybody is enjoying sex this season. Losing her virginity will seem very unimportant compared to the fear of being different. Every man is a playboy. With his first issue, Playboy displayed the airbrushed girls next door. To every man or boy who could pay the price of the magazine, married or single, every man and everybody could be a Playboy forever. Later seeing himself as Playboy's January 1954 bow-tied rabbit sandwiched between two women in swimsuits and heels. Indeed, in 1955, Hefner explained his playmates. It's natural to think of the... Goodness, what in the world is this word? Poltridiousness. Now, that's not even correct. P-U-L-C-H-R-I-T-U-D-I-N-O-U-S. Poltrudinous. Maybe that's it. Playmates as existing in a world apart. Actual potential playmates are all around you. The new secretary at your office. The doe-eyed beauty who sat opposite you at lunch yesterday. The girl who sells your shirts and ties in your favorite store. By the 1950s, although psychologist Abraham Maslow, Ph.D., is still advocating women's self-actualization, primarily as wives and mothers, dozens of writers had already cited the same evidence from the Kinsey Report that persuaded Betty Friedan of a link between women's emancipation and their greater capacity for sexual fulfillment. Finally, after 10 years of their husbands lusting for Miss June, July, and August, the closet communist Betty Friedan, she wasn't no closet communist, she was a full-blown, outright communist, put down Das Kapital, her broom and mop, and the feminist movement was born. In The Feminine Mystique, 1963, Friedan expressed the betrayal of college-educated superwives and supermoms who married for love and togetherness only to find their college-educated husbands dragging Playboy paper doll fantasies into the conjugal bed. In 1963, hubby claimed that he read Playboy for the articles. Wives only objected. Wives who objected were told that they were jealous or had no sense of humor. The Vietnam War might become a political issue in the late 1960s, but armed with Kinsey's lies, Hefner and his paper doll had created another issue, rocking and revolutionizing the marriage bed. The national view of sex and love would never be the same. In Love and Will, 1969, psychotherapist Rollo May, Ph.D., noted the sexual fascism, the detached, mechanical, uninviting, vicious, typical, schizoid faces of the women sold by Playboy. He said famously that Hefner shifted the fig leaf from the genitals to the face. In fact, Hefner hijacked Judeo-Christian virtue, seducing men and boys to trade in their beloved sweetheart for interchangeable monthly paper doll playmates. As men suddenly questioned the integrity of their wives and girlfriends, as well as parents and friends, May predicted that Kinsey's attack on intimacy and sex would increase male hostility and impotence. Yes, big snob word there. Big time snob word. In an amazing short period following World War I, we shifted from acting as though sex did not exist at all to being obsessed with it. From bishops to biologists, everyone is in on the act. Note the whole turgid flood of post-Keynesian utilitarianism. Couples place great emphasis on bookkeeping and timetables in their lovemaking, a practice confirmed and standardized by Kinsey. Where the Victorian didn't want anyone to know that he or she had sexual feelings. We are ashamed if we do not. The Victorian nice man or woman was guilty if he or she did experience sex. Now we are guilty if we don't. We feel less in order to perform better. My impression is that importance is increasing. It is becoming harder for young men as well as old to take yes for an answer. In fact, just as he was recognized as the father of the sexual revolution, the impotent Kinsey should be known as the father of the impotence evolution. the one being the natural overgrowth of the other. Sad as it is, this state of affairs is also glaringly apt, even predictable, since Kinsey himself suffered from traumatic masturbatory syndrome. Though people consider masturbation taboo in Kinsey's days, not so today. Now it is instead taboo to admit that masturbation can be addictive, and that chronic masturbation can cause impotence. Indeed, mass retailing of pornography in recent decades has led to clinical traumatic masturbatory syndrome. Lawrence Sank, Ph.D., is a Center for Cognitive Therapy in Bethesda, Maryland, discussed TMS in a 1998 article in Journal of Sex and Marital Therapy. According to Sank, TMS results from masturbating prone. It causes severe sexual dysfunction in most males who practice it, leading to a long history of sexual failure. But the cost of pornography is much more devastating than the masturbation-based impotence men inflict upon themselves. The vast world of internet pornography has obviously made female, male, and child sexual abuse ever more common. A 2002 article in the Duke Law Review notes, Parents arrested for online sharing of explicit photos of their own children are just one example of how child pornography, though extremely socially unacceptable, is an already created and fortunately booming market. We trace this victimization back to the Kinseys, who has their colleagues, subjects, and not likely their own children in their attic porn. Pornography's power over the brain mirror neurons. Science Magazine has reported for decades on the mirror mechanism, whereby the human brain links visual to motor neurons. When we watch an event, our bodies physically mirror the excitement we feel. We are actually involved in the event. Significantly, watching the film triggers the same neural mechanism neurochemical sites as watching an actual event, neuroscientist Greg Miller reported. This mirroring... Hang on a second here. Yeah, hang on, Judd. I'm going to go to a break. Okay. Well, that was quick. Henny, just going to be 2 hours. Judd is beat. He's not going to be able to make it today. That was him calling, so, well, I'm going to take a break now because I'm lost. I don't know where I'm at, so, I'll go ahead and put, couple of things on. About 4.5 minutes, everyone, so I'll be right back.
Sweet and weary head, night is falling. You've come to journey's end. Sleep now. Across the
Okay, two more Lord of the Rings songs. And welcome back for the last break. Last 20-some-odd minutes here. Oh, geez. I'm still lost. I forgot to look where I was at. I marked the page, but I forgot to look. Okay, that looks familiar, so I read that. I think I'll just start right here. Parents arrested for the online sharing of explicit photos of their own children are just one example of how child pornography, though extremely socially unacceptable, has already created an unfortunate booming market. I think I read that, so. We trace this victimization back to the Kinseys, who used their colleagues, subjects, and not unlikely their own children in their attic porn. Pornographer's power over the brain. Mirror neurons. Yeah, I started reading this. Okay. This mirroring, maybe I didn't read that. Science magazine has reported for decades on the mirror mechanism, whereby the human brain links visual to motor neurons. I think I did read that. When we watch an event, our bodies physically mirror the excitement we feel we were actually involved in the event. Significantly, watching a film triggers the same neurochemical sites as watching an actual event. Neuroscientist Greg Miller reported, this mirroring process is why the tarantula scene in Dr. No gives people the heebie-jeebies, and why we flinch when we see someone cut her finger on a kitchen knife. Yeah. Although the intensity is normally less, our reproductive organs are similarly stirred if we witness sexual actions, even animal coital actions. As in monkey see, monkey do, our brains translate the highly intense or intimate actions we observe into our body's neuro and motor activity. Therefore, exposing children to animal or human mating is perilous, premature, learning by imitation. In his research on mirror neurons, Miller reports, actual touch and the observation touch elicitly similar activity in the subject's secondary somatosensory cortex, an area involved in processing touch. It's as if the brain translates vision into sensation. Miller added, if we see something behaving badly, a sadist, you hopefully don't share their joy. Unfortunately, hope clashes here with reality, as Kinsey's facial expression clearly demonstrated when he forced small children to watch a film of porcupines violently mating. This revealing photograph of a classic example of how people with impaired emotional experience are also impaired at recognizing, judging, or caring about emotions in others. Researchers at the University of Picardy, Jules Verne in France, studied young male volunteers who viewed neural films as well as videos of men stroking naked women. Fellatio and engaging in intercourse. The fMRI scans and the men's penile plethysmography a tube that measures erection. Word in concert, the men got erections and the brain lit up. It turned out that the erections followed the mirror neurons. That is called a cause-effect relationship. The activation comes before the erection. The study finds the viewer's mirror neurons automatically imitate the pornography to produce erections. Jonah Lehrer, author of Proust, was a neuroscientist, writes that pornography works like convincing us that we are not watching porn. Huh? We think we are inside the screen, doing the deed. A study in neuroimage also found that looking at still pictures of naked people triggered our mirror neurons into action. As the brain began pretending it was actually having sex, and not just looking at smutty pictures in the science lab. Thus, viewing still or moving pornography automatically triggers solo masturbation or coitus or sodomy with a willing or unwilling adult or child, lest one become frustrated, anxious, angry, and depressed indeed, hence cause and effect, and widespread pornography addictions set crimes. The erototoxic virus. Sociopolitical essayist Jason Miller, a typical liberal college graduate and former pornography consumer, casts no stones at porn users. Instead, Miller would have them admit its virus-like harm, both to them and to all society. He describes his relationship, typical of millions of similar men, with one liberated woman. She was so damaged by pornography that despite her attractive physical appearance, she saw herself as ugly and overweight. Her ex-husband had been addicted to pornography. He was physically abusive, insisted on watching porn movies while they had sex, and forced her to act out the parts of the women in the movies. Based on these experiences, she lived in a nightmare world of virtually endless and hopeless psychological competition with fantasy women. She was comparing herself to airbrushed, surgically enhanced women whom pornographers portrayed as compliant sex partners with endless cravings of hot, delicious, such as these do not occur in nature. In August 1974, pornographic Playboy cartoon shows a young couple in bed, naked. The male is grinning at a large Playboy centerfold nude photo that he has placed across the body of the beautiful young woman upon whom he is mating. As in similar Playboy cartoons and illustrations, the female is not a mate, but reduced to serving as a Playboy receptacle. She looks up and asks plaintively, "Are you sure you still love me, Henry?" This has become the reality in millions of homes and university dorm rooms. Henry's daily parade of pornographic paper dolls, and often his own hand, is more key than his once beloved mate, triggering what psychiatrists call his squirt reflex. What a trade-off. Impotence without pornographic images is his mind. Henry is like millions of men, boys, and increasingly women and girls worldwide. Playboy publishers are on record as being fully aware that they are creating impotent male users and addictive and addiction to their products. They feed us this fear with images of all wives are as fat, old, ugly, having sex with a family dog, or as sex adulterous swingers. Playboy published thousands of cartoons, jokes, and articles with these ideals, while threatening their customers' impotence. I'm sorry. While threatening their customers' potency. Playboy jokes that doctors, lawyers, pilots, professors, preachers, writers, artists, and men are too small or impotent, endangered by women. Typically, November 1983, enter Landy jokes that Shakespeare is important. Well, Mr. To Be or Not To Be. Is it to be or not to be? Emasculation by pornographers is happening on a global scale. Worse, such Playboy pornography, circa 1970s, including The Thrill of Rape, as in a Playboy September 1971 image of a chained woman about to be raped by two train engineers. Such constant propaganda helped fuel scientists like evolutionary psychologist Randy Thornhill and Craig Palmer, who argue that rape is normal, for natural selection has furnished men with behaviors that make it easier for them to commit rape. The FBI admitted that forcible rape in the United States increased a staggering 418% in 39 years. This statistic only includes reported female victims over the age 12, while the population increased a mere 52%. In fact, when society sufficiently abhors and punishes rape and anything that supports it, rape decreases. When society pardons rape, it increases. Pornography is the Bible and the bile of the human sexuality movement, and it is toxic and erotoxic, toxin and erotoxin. Many pornographers' victims have testified to Playboy's role in their victimization. See the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, July 1986. Consider the testimony of addiction therapist Mary Ann Layden, Ph.D., of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania, an expert witness on pornography effects before the U.S. Senate in 1999. Layden said, "One, I treat sexual violence victims, perpetrators, and sex addicts. Number two, every case of sexual violence that I have treated has involved pornography. Number three, sexual violence and pathology involves distortions called permission-giving beliefs. Number four, many psychological problems and social problems showed traces of these distortions. Number five, the media spreads the distortion called pornography distortion. Number six, research finds that pornography spreads these distorted beliefs, including the belief that children are not harmed by pornography. Number seven, visual images are mentally stored facts and events. Number eight, visual images are stored permanently. Number nine, children are especially vulnerable to images. Number 10, the internet contains the three factors that produce antisocial behavior in children. Number 11, sexual violence and pathology are frequent. Number 12, we cannot accept a society where the factors that hurt children are spread in schools and libraries. Playboy led consumers to incest. Hugh Hefner called himself Kinsey's pamphleteer. By 2003, David Shaw, writing in the Los Angeles Times, quoted the king of the porn as boasting that after 50 years of Playboy, we all live in Hef's world. We all now live, to some extent, in a Playboy world. I can see the effects of the magazine and its campaign for sexual openness everywhere. When George Will was here the other day interviewing me, he said, "You won," and he's right. It's nice to have gone through the battles with all those Puritans, all those forces of repression and hypocrisy, and to live long enough to see the victory parade. But who are we? Who really won? Clearly Playboy won. Big pornography won. Playboy always had a corner on the market, but it was not long the only magazine on the market. It took 15 years before Playboy was followed by a more degrading magazine, Penthouse. 10 years after Penthouse was on the newsstands, Hustler emerged, adding brutal depictions of bestiality, scatology, and racism that had been finessed in Playboy and Penthouse. From there, dozens of pornographic picture books came out of the woodwork. Wardell Pomeroy's pornographic addictions began in the Kinsey attic, made him a natural fit for employment by big pornography. Pomeroy was a paid advisor, consultant, and expert witness for Penthouse Forum Variations, the pornographic publication that taught bestiality, sadism, homosexuality, bisexuality, and incest, with the magazine euphemistically dubbed Home Sex. One of many Penthouse titillating incest articles by Pomeroy came sandwiched between two planted editorial letters alleged from young women who were thrilled at their incestuous lives. The text of both letters are deliberately pornographic. One of them recalled the memory of a 5 or 6 year old having sex each morning with Papa. That editorial plant, disguised as a young woman, was very graphic and explained. It felt marvelous. The other Penthouse letter alleged that a young girl's lust seduced her handsome, intelligent dad. Mom found out, joined them in the trio, and yes, you guessed it, all three lived happily ever after. Penthouse perpetuated the rape and incest theme with Wicked Wanda, a comic strip starting in 1973 that copied Playboy's Little Annie Fanny comic strip. That began in October 1962. The Playboy strip's underlying pedophile core is based on its inspiration. Harold Gray's Little Orphan Annie. Playboy's Annie Fanny is a massive-breasted, blonde, innocent, stripped, naked, and often gang-raped from 1962 to 1988. And again briefly in 1998, Wicked Wanda, the Penthouse copy, is raven-haired, huge-breasted, naked, wicked, and depraved. Her blonde childlike sidekick, Candy Floss, wearing white and pink communion-like addresses prior to various rapes is the penthouse pedophile, Hook. I think Mark should change that, calling you that there, Andy. That's what I think. Maybe you should change your name. No more Annie Fanny. Oh, well, I think it's a good place to end right here. Getting a bit hungry. Won't do it anymore. Is that where you got that name from, huh, Mark? Or did you get that name from there, Annie? I don't know. I think I'll end with one more short Lord of the Rings song. About a minute and a half, everyone, and say, hope to see everyone tomorrow. Until next time.